Blog Talk Radio.
Kane gets the puck, sends it across for Campoli. It went over his stick, but Ryan Johnson clears the zone. Ham Hughes intercepts, dumps the puck back in. Campoli has it, flips it. Burrow steals, cutting in, shoots, scores! They slayed the dragon! Alex Burrow!
Whoa, baby!
Hi, Superstar. How you doing?
I'm awesome. How are you?
Fantastic. Welcome, everybody. It is the Third Man In Radio here on blogtalkradio.com. We'll talk about that later. Monday night, July the 11th, 2011, 8:01 here in Chicago. Back. It's been a while, Superstar. I can't tell you how long it's been.
It has been a while.
Actually, I can't tell you. It was May 19th. So just about a month or 2 months.
A little sabbatical for us. It's not, you know, always a bad thing.
No, it was actually a very good thing. We tried. We did. We tried a couple of times. How's your summer been, Superstar? So far, so good.
It's good. It's moving around, you know, along quickly. I cannot believe that we're after the 4th of July already. It seems like it wasn't that long ago that we were hoping for some warm weather to finally come our way. And here we are, you know, halfway through July. It's going to be August and regular camp, and everything's going to get going here sooner than later.
So all has been good?
Yeah, everything's great. How about you?
It's been a freaking nightmare. But things are looking up. We're gonna. You and I are gonna take an excursion this coming weekend.
We are up to Somerset, Wisconsin.
I want to bring this up, Superstar, because I heard you last night. I want to plug the show. Over the weekend, you did another podcast to warm up to come back to here. Yeah, it was the best I've ever heard you on internet radio. It was at radioexposed.net. And you took some pot shots at me and this show right off the get go, but you settled in very nicely and you did a good job. So people check that out.
I appreciate that. And as you know, we started that podcast at about 2 o'clock in the morning. Luckily, neither myself or Tinky over there were too inebriated to do it, but we got it done. I think it went well.
Do you know how hot it was today, Superstar?
It was really hot.
It started off really nice this morning. I was out. I was out with the dog in the backyard, and the storm clouds come running through. And I go to Rutu. My dog's name is Rutu. I go, Rutu, we gotta go. And, you know, and he's just looking at me like, you know, he's running around the yard. I go, no, you know, because he's like 5 pounds. I go, oh, you don't understand, Rutu. We have to go. And like no sooner did I pick him up, we go in the house, we walk up the stairs, and the grill goes flying. I have two aluminum chairs in the backyard. Those things go flying. So if Rutu was out in the yard unattended, Rutu would probably be about 4 blocks down right now.
Yeah, Rutu could get swept up pretty quickly.
That would be – the storm probably hit during your morning commute, did it not?
You know what? It was right after my morning commute. We got inside the building, and in the office, we have huge skylights, you know, in the sky, you know, windows, so we could look up. And I looked up, and it looked like it was, you know, midnight, just completely black. So it was luckily right after the commute, but have been something because my commute is about all of, 4 minutes.
Yeah, like I said before, we're going to go in on the show here. I don't want to be here all night. We don't want to overextend ourselves in our first night back.
No, you got to ease into these things.
Yeah, I believe that we will be back pretty much weekly. Now that everything's happened and there's nothing to cover, we're going to do the show every week.
Right.
That's the way we do it. You know what? And I got to tell you right now, we're going to 100 and then I'm done. That's it. What are we at right now?
That's it?
Yeah, we're going to once we get to 100, it's over. I'm done. Let me check real quick. You might have to give me a minute. I don't even remember what number we're on. But I'll check what number we're on, and then I'll be able to tell you when you're free to go, Superstar.
Okay. I don't know if I'll be looking forward to that or if that'll be a sad day.
It won't be a sad day.
You'll be celebrating.
It won't be a sad day for me.
No, you'll be celebrating.
Let's see. We're at 85. This is number 85.
Well, so after tonight, are we just trying to stretch this thing out all year, or are we, going to go hot and heavy for 15
weeks? No, we're going to do 3 a week until the start of the season, so we get the heck out of here. I just want to get to the accomplishment of 100, and then we can call it. Then we can, instead of once a week having to do this, we could just go out and get drunk.
Right. I like that idea.
Okay, so the last time we did one of these, it was the day that the Blackhawks re-signed Corey Crawford to that deal. So I said we're not going to be here all night, but we got a lot to cover.
We have a lot to cover.
All right. I also want to say that I did attend. I saw a little bit of the topic of today, unless you want to talk about Rob Klinkhammer. The topic of today is the conclusion of the 2011 Blackhawks prospect camp, or development camp as it is now. Got some things to say on that. I saw today's scrimmage. I was out there at Johnny's West, and I saw snippets of Saturday's scrimmages as well. I didn't see everybody, but I did see some of that. I saw all of today, so we're going to talk about that a little bit later on. Talk about who impressed, who didn't impress, and which guys that you'll hear an awful lot about, but only because the people that are saying things to you don't know what they're talking about. All right, I'm just looking at this. So, why don't we start with? I don't want to talk about the draft. Do you have anything that you want to say about the Thrashers moving to Winnipeg? Does that concern you at all?
No, it doesn't concern me at all.
What about John McDonough naming, becoming the president and CEO? Is that anything that you're interested in?
No.
Kevin Shaver?
Yeah, no, not at all. I did find it funny that the Chicago Wolves are now the AHL affiliate of the Vancouver Canucks. Fitting that the Canucks and Hawks rivalry, and now the Vancouver farm team is in the Blackhawks' backyard.
Okay, you want to talk about that? What's your take on that? Because I have very strong opinions about this, and I think they might surprise some people. What is your take on it?
Well, I think it was smart for the Manitoba Moose to become the AHL franchise, the Winnipeg Jets. I didn't think there was a surprise there. It makes sense, which obviously left Vancouver without an NHL affiliate, and then the Wolves without an NHL affiliate. So it was, I'm not looking too much into it. It's more just ironic with the rivalry between the Hawks and Canucks that now they have the case of this.
So you're not one of those people that's really upset about this? Like, how dare the Chicago Wolves align themselves with the hated Vancouver Canucks? That's you don't care
no.
about that?
No. I don't care at all.
I think a lot of people that think along those lines. First of all, in order for you to be offended, you'd probably need to be a, you know, someone who actually buys tickets to Chicago Wolves games. So, you know, if you are and you're still offended, that this still affects you. I think you kind of got to understand, you know, you Superstar, you used to have Chicago Wolves season tickets for a long time, since their inception up to a point. And I had them for quite a long time as well. The appeal, minor league hockey, the business of minor league hockey is it's more geared towards affordable family entertainment. Now, there's people like you and myself, and probably a bunch of guys listen to this, that are looking for a place and an excuse to go have some, you know, hoo-ha time.
Right.
With hockey as a backdrop. But both of those cases, which is a large percentage of what, however many people you get in the Allstate Arena on a given night, the players on the ice, where they're coming from, what organization, it has absolutely nothing to do with why you're there.
No, and, not at all.
And first of all, you know, if you're someone who's inclined to hate, you have this emotion of hatred towards a sporting franchise in British Columbia, I think we need to sit you down and have a little talk about with you about what's important in life. But secondly, the prospects that were in Manitoba that are moving to the Allstate Arena, you don't hate them yet because you don't even know who they are. So again, it doesn't mean anything. If anything, the fact that this made news, the fact that, you know, how many people knew that it was the Atlanta Thrashers that were the affiliate of the Wolves? Probably everybody listening to this, but your average person going to the building, maybe they knew, maybe they didn't. But I'm sure that a large percentage of them didn't follow the Thrashers on a day-in, day-out basis. The hardcores, maybe, like when players get called up. But, again, it doesn't mean anything. The business of minor league hockey, first and foremost, is to get people in your building. And for Don Levin and for the Chicago Wolves, they did the best thing that they could to get people into their building. The fact of the matter is, whether Blackhawks fans are going to go in mass to an Ice Hogs Wolves game to cheer against the Chicago Wolves when Rockford visits the Allstate Arena doesn't matter. It's not embarrassing to the Chicago Wolves because you are giving them your money. And once you're in their building, it's their job to entertain you and to give you the most they can for your entertainment dollar. At that point, it's on them. It's on them to win you over. But that's half the battle, is just getting you in the building. So they did the right thing. Now, the interesting part of this now is that Don Levin is out in Seattle trying to build an NHL and NBA co-branded arena. He's got sites that he's looking at, and he's trying to get himself a building out there. Now, what does that mean? Is Don Levin trying to get into the NBA business, or is he trying to lure an NHL franchise to Seattle? And if it doesn't work for him, will he up and move his Chicago Wolves to Seattle in the meantime while he waits to attract an NHL franchise to Seattle? It's an interesting question. Why would Don Levin suddenly have this interest in Seattle, and now he has the Vancouver Canucks? That would be a great location in the interim for Vancouver's AHL franchise. A lot of people talk about, oh, well, you know, that's a long distance, 4 hours. Well, what about the LA Kings and the Manchester, New Hampshire Monarchs? That's a lot farther.
That's a good distance right there.
Chicago to Vancouver is you know, that's a short flight compared to that. The Worcester Sharks and the San Jose Sharks, again, same thing. You're talking 6 hours instead of four. So, I mean, there's other things. I think the thing about it that surprised me is that I thought that the second option here for the Wolves would have been the Calgary Flames, because Calgary is out in Abbotsford, which is Vancouver Canuck territory. And in Canada, it's a much bigger deal that, you know, Canucks fans just aren't going out to watch Vancouver or Calgary Flames prospects. It's a different thing up there in Canada. If you've ever been to Canada and flipped on their version of SportsCenter, you'd understand why. You don't turn on the TV in Chicago and get Chicago Wolves highlights, barely ever. Not anymore. I mean, maybe occasionally on a slow sports night, but up there in Canada, it's a SportsCenter. Their SportsCenter, TSN SportsCenter, is in the winter, it's a lot of hockey. And in Vancouver, Abbotsford is, you know, in that area, it's covered, and people just aren't going to see that. So Abbotsford's losing all this money. The Canucks were interested in buying Abbotsford. For whatever reason, that didn't happen. And now you have the second shoe to drop, which is Don Levin, who Vancouver's now in bed with, is interested in something in Seattle. So it'll be interesting to keep an eye on that and see where that goes. But as someone that would, you know, I don't go to as many Wolves games now obviously I don't have season tickets. And, you know, with me going out to Rockford as much as I can, there's only so much AHL hockey I can take. But, you know, I think it's so irrelevant. And it was comical how worked up people got over it. And again, if you're not paying money to go see Chicago Wolves games, how does it affect you? It doesn't affect you at all.
No, it does.
All right. I wasn't expecting that we were going to talk about that. But that's okay.
Sorry, buddy.
I'm going to complain like you complained on Radio Exposed the other night about not having notes. You're, you know what, Superstar? You have made the transition. You are a real radio professional now because you're complaining that someone's not putting notes in front of you to make you sound intelligent. You're advanced. You have passed the course, my friend.
It was amazing the amount of notes and preparation that those guys go through. And, you know, I was like, yeah, we don't do any of this. He's like, what do you mean you don't do any of this? I'm like, yeah, we probably just call in and wing it. And, you know, I'm like, yeah, occasionally I'll get an outline of what we're going to go over. But for the most part, we just go on and wing it.
I'm looking forward to it. For those of you, again, we'll plug radioexposed.net. It is .net. I think .com is something else, ironically radio-related. But radioexposed.net, this coming weekend, I will be on that show. So it should be interesting just to hear that one.
Because that is going to be must-listen radio right there.
Yeah, because that's unfiltered, wear your headphones at work, internet podcasting right there. We're going to talk about Dan Carcillo later, so that might be some earphones. Or turn your radio down at your desk when we start talking about Dan Carcillo. All right, so just looking through my notes here. So Mark Bergevin takes Kevin Cheveldayoff's place. McIver gets promoted. Scotty Bowman extension. That surprise you at all?
Not really.
No, it didn't surprise you at all.
No.
The guy just won't go away.
No, he won't. And do you expect him to, really?
No. Why would he? I mean, he's got everybody that showers him with affection all the time. He's got a gigantic ego, and there's plenty of people around that are satisfying that ego, and then some. He's got a lot of power. I think it's interesting that three of the Blackhawks' free agent signings were in their prime when Scotty Bowman was still a head coach.
That is, yeah.
That was interesting, wasn't it?
It was, well, to use a different word for it as far as our free agent class, but yeah, interesting. We'll go with that.
Yeah, I called for, you know, and I don't have a problem with Scotty Bowman at all. You know, I just, I'd like to see Stan Bowman stand on his own. And as long as Scotty's sort of hovering over his shoulder, you just don't know. You just don't know how much of this is really Stan's crafty work, you know, craftsmanship. And I think that's unfair to Stan. I really do. Like I've said this before, if they're great, if they win again, he will have to share in the credit. If they lose, he's going to get all the blame because no one's going to blame Scotty Bowman. But if they win, Stan will be there, and then there'll be somebody, whether it's Pierre McGuire or whoever, is going to be standing there saying, that's Scotty Bowman. He's got a lot of influence, and Scotty's going to do a sprint to the ice. like he did at the podium and then at the NHL draft when he nudged Norm McIver out of the way so he could be in the front row of the picture next to Mark McNeil. This is what Scotty loves. He loves the attention. He wants to be in it. He wants to have that influence. And I think it's unfair to his kid. That's my only thing about it.
Well, I think you really nailed it when you said it'd be nice to find out. Cut the cord. Let Stan, stand or fail on his own. And until he goes away, it's not going to happen.
Blackhawks released their schedule. Scheduling news we might want to touch on a little bit. Realignment is going to happen, obviously, with the Winnipeg Jets. Moving and now in Western quarters. Blackhawks start off Friday, October 7th at Dallas. The next night they turn around and play the Dallas Stars in a rematch at the United Center in the Blackhawks home opener. Saturday, October 8th is also the Rockford IceHogs home opener. Don't know that I can be in two places at one time, Superstar.
It might be pretty tough.
Scheduling realignment. They're talking about, two different proposals that I've heard, but the one I think that's going around the most is the time zone alignment, and then obviously splitting up teams in the East. I've seen four divisions. I've also seen six divisions, but basically the gist of it is that they're going to break these things down. Somebody's going to move East, whether it be Columbus or probably either Columbus or Nashville. I don't think Detroit's going to get their way, not unless there's another team moving West. And I don't see that right now. Maybe in a few years, Seattle gets a team, but I don't see that right now. But the gist of it is that the major complaint that we've had in these last 6 years is that some years you don't get certain teams coming into your building on the home schedule. And, of course, that most concerns season ticket holders who put down a lot of money and they don't get to see, instead of seeing like last year, Blackhawks fans didn't see a lot of the original six. This year they're going to see them all, including Boston right away. Isn't that the second Saturday of the season? I don't have the schedule in front of me.
I believe, yes, it is. I know it's in the first 2 weeks.
Saturday, October 15th, so it's the second Saturday. It's the third home game. Blackhawks have Winnipeg on the Thursday, October 13th. But, yeah, Bruins come to town second Saturday of the season. Oh. Okay, like I said, we can get into the draft another time, and there's not really a whole lot we can say about it. Aside from the Blackhawks picked a lot of guys.
A lot of guys.
I was shocked that Mark McNeil dropped to where he did, and that I think the Blackhawks are very fortunate. I don't think he did anything this week at prospect camp to do himself any favors. I know there was a little buzz about him being a guy that maybe he could make the team. And then he steps out on the ice in prospect camp, and he's really not all that big compared to the other guys that were out there with him. And his skating needs work. He needs time. So he's going to go back to junior. And that's fine. He's an 18-year-old kid. You're the Blackhawks. You shouldn't need an 18-year-old kid who was drafted 18th overall to come in right away and help you. That shouldn't be what's going on here. But they were very fortunate to get that kid. I think they were also very fortunate, Brandon Saad, for him to drop as low as he did. This Philippe Danault. It looks like Vinny LeCavalier is his favorite player, but Danault plays with a little bit more edge. Didn't really see a whole heck of a lot out of him at prospect camp either. He didn't do anything really. Sodded a nice goal today, this morning, Monday morning. I believe it was the first goal of the scrimmage. Only a few goals scored in the scrimmage. But he looked okay. But none of these guys are going to make the team. That's a pipe dream. It's not going to happen. The only guy that really has a chance, and that's if the Blackhawks get a lot of injuries on defense, is Dylan Olsen. And even so, that's pushing it. I mean, that's really pushing it. He needs time to go down and just play in all situations. Same thing we talked about with Letty, only Olsen's a bigger guy that you want to go out and have him dominate games, you know, both with his, you know, the puck on his stick and in a physical sense. Olsen showed up in prospect camp this week in really good shape. I know he said he lost weight, but that was probably just due to whatever off-season training regimen he's on. He's just getting leaner. He's getting tighter. He's getting leaner. He's probably building muscle. So he looked really good. He looked really good. And again, I mean, this is the third prospect camp in a row that Dylan Olsen stands out. His 18, his 19, and his 20-year-old year, he stands out as one of the best guys in prospect camp, and he's still right there. I mean, of all the guys that were there this week, he was the best one, and he should be. He's the only guy. He's the only pro there. Played half a pro season. He's the only pro there, so he should be. But you know, he looks like he's really ready to make a step here and have a great season in Rockford. This brings us to Brian Campbell. What do you think?
Well, you know, obviously with where the Hawks are with the salary cap and the moves that they are going to have to make and made already, getting rid of that contract was the biggest thing. I don't think they really wanted to get rid of Brian Campbell as much as they wanted to get rid of the contract. And obviously the guy who signed Brian Campbell here is the one to take him off the Hawks' hands. So I think the Hawks owe a lot to Dale Talon for taking that contract. I was a little shocked at the move. I didn't think they were going to be able to move the contract, but they were able to, and I think it's a good thing. I really do.
Well, you're right. I mean, listen, whether Brian Campbell was Brian Campbell that we all came to know in his 3 years with the Blackhawks, whether he was that guy, whether he was John Scott level of ability, or whether he was the Norris Trophy Award winner of 2011. No matter what he was, that contract was going to have to be moved. If he won the Norris a week, you know, the week basically of the draft, just a few days before he was traded. If he had won the Norris, that contract was still going to have to be moved. So, you know, eventually. Maybe it didn't absolutely have to be moved this summer, but it needed to be moved at some point. And because of the cap going up so much again, you know, this thing started at $39 million. Now it's $64.3. We're going into a next summer. We're looking at a new CBA with probably another round of player rollbacks. Probably we're not going to have this goofy thing with the average over the term as your cap number. Probably get something more. You know, I mean, you'll still give the GMs the flexibility of being creative, but probably going to get to a point where it's like, no, what you're making is your cap number. Because the NHL wants to get rid of these silly contracts, like Brad Richards just signed another one with the Rangers, another ridiculous contract that it's obvious that you could just by looking at it, you know where the guy's going to retire. They want to get rid of those. So with the cap going up so much as it was and the floor going up as much as it did, it created this opportunity in Florida where Brian Campbell had a desire. He was a desirable player for Dale Talon. There's no question about that. He's a desirable player who comes with a contract that helps him out in getting up to that cap floor, because Dale had no players. You know, this was the unfortunate thing for him, is he had no players that were, you know, that had contracts coming due and or were worthy of getting big pay raises. In fact, he got rid of guys that were making a decent amount of money because they sucked too. One of them came in the Brian Campbell trade, Rusty Olesch. But, you know, I know, and I've been one of Brian Campbell's biggest defenders, but the reality is that contract eventually was going to have to be moved. And if the Blackhawks determined that this was their best opportunity, that with the uncertainty of what's going to be the next CBA, if this opportunity came up right now, then you can't really criticize it. You can't say, even if, you know, like myself, who understands Brian Campbell's presence, his role, his ability on this team, his value, and that he pushes a pace, and he you know, the way he can take that puck and move it out of danger in a snap of a finger with grace, really. It's not something that you replace easy, but if Nick Leddy is going to be what the Bowmans think he's going to be, you have to get rid of the Brian Campbell contract at some point. And again, if this was the best opportunity and you felt that if you waited too long, you'd get stuck with that contract until its completion, then I can't criticize the move at all. And, you know, there was some monkey business with rumors getting spread that Campbell was offered, and there was a trade on the table with Columbus, and Campbell said he wouldn't waive it. And of course that got out, and, you know, Campbell doesn't, you know, he already doesn't have his fans. I mean, he's got the Brian Campbell detractors are out there. And then once that rumor was out there that he turned down a trade offer, then this, you know, and then Columbus vehemently denied that they were ever in trade talks with the Blackhawks. So figure that one out for yourself and how that one got started. And then the real trade, which was with Florida, and, you know, Brian Campbell, you know, what are you going to do? You know, if you're Brian Campbell, he knows the score. He and his agent know the score. Just what we said. Eventually, the Blackhawks are going to have to get rid of that contract. He won a Stanley Cup. He's going to make his money. He's going to go to a place where he's got familiarity with Dale Talon. It's not a bad place to play as far as living somewhere. It's in the Eastern time zone. You know, and they're going to make – he was probably told that they were going to make all these moves. They had to. They had no choice. If I was a Florida Panther follower, I'd be a little bit concerned with a couple of those moves. Ed Jovanovski on a plus 35 deal. I think Ed Jovanovski going back to Florida is the right move for the Panthers organization, and bringing back a guy that the fans identify with the good old days. That's important, but the contract that Jovanovski got is pretty crazy. But again, just like when he was here in Chicago and he's trying to turn this thing around in Chicago, sometimes you have to overpay or give an extra year or more money to a guy just because that's what you do to get someone to go to a market or a team that they look at and they say, well, I'm not going to win there, so what's the incentive for me to go there, you know? So that's kind of the position that Dale was in. He had to spend all this money, and he had to overpay all these guys again. But all that being said, you know, I don't know who replaces Brian Campbell, because Steve Monitor is not going to replace Brian Campbell. Steve Monitor should be brought in to be a third pair D. he and Chris Campoli, I mean, they're going to be an expensive third pair D. But that should be your third pair. And I mean, whether they start out as the second pair because you're going to ease Nick Leddy into a heavy workload next to Hjalmarsson, or whether, you know, that's really how it should be. You know, you shouldn't be fooling around with defense pairings and just kind of, you know, patching things together. The Blackhawks have to get off to a good start. They know they got a lot of home games, especially after that November road trip. But October's huge. Then you got the November circus trip, and then you've got tons of home. I think you got 18 home games in December and January. You got to make things happen early. You can't be fooling around. So you go with your best, and you know, you just got to. I mean, Letty's here. You're not going anywhere. You've got that spot. He'd basically have to throw coffee at Stan Bowman to get sent back to Rockford. So, you know.
Well, you know, one of the things that you bring up is Nick Leddy and possibly starting him on the second pair with Monagor. Now, I the issue I have with that is, like you said, easing Leddy into that heavier workload. You know, we talked a lot about it last year. You know, Nick Leddy this, Nick Leddy that. Well, he was playing 7, 8, 9, 12 minutes a game, if that. And now you're going to try easing him in, and I understand it, but it seems now like where this team is, you've done yourself a huge disservice by not getting him on the ice a little bit more in those situations last year.
Well, what are you going to do? You know, you're up against it. You're trying to make the playoffs. You know, you're trying to make the playoffs. You're in the playoffs. You're trying to win. You know, you can't just have a guy out there getting charity minutes in a playoff game. A coach will lose the respect of his players. You know,
I'm not saying give him charity minutes, but I think he could have been used a little bit more than he was. Yeah, I'm not saying, hey, this team is in the cup. Go out there, throw the young kids out. We may be bad, but at least they're getting time. They're learning at the best, you know, the top level. No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying he could have gotten a little bit more minutes without overly hurting your team than putting yourself in a better situation going into this year than you would have been, you know, otherwise.
Well, we talked about this a little bit last year, the last season, you know, when Leddy was in the lineup, and we're like, well, why is this guy coming up? And why is Stan Bowman forcing this guy when he could be in Rockford playing in all situations, getting all these minutes? And we joked, I mean, because I didn't see Brian Campbell being traded right now, you know, right at this moment. You know, once the cap went up as much as it did and you looked at certain teams, you know, it was like, well, maybe there's a chance. I still didn't think it was going to happen. I was still surprised on the day, you know, the draft, when the first rumor popped up. I was like, wow, they're actually going to be able to do this. But, you know, we joked about it at the time. Maybe Stan knows he's going to trade him, and he's you know, his hands are forced. Leddy's his guy. He's going to put Leddy in that position next year, so he wants to get him NHL minutes at whatever the cost. We joked about it on this show. You can go back and listen to it. I didn't think it was going to happen, but it ended up happening. So maybe next time when we're looking at something on the ice that doesn't make any sense to us, we should remember back to this and think, well, maybe the unthinkable is going to happen, because maybe that was the reason. Maybe it was just because Stan just was absolutely in love with Nick Leddy and Nick Leddy's game. And that's the reason. And he didn't know that he was going to be able to get it done. Maybe he wanted to. Maybe he knew that was, you know, like he wanted to do that before the next CBA, obviously. But he didn't know. But, you know, we know what we saw. And Nick Leddy was being pushed into a situation that he wasn't completely ready for. He wasn't overwhelmed. He wasn't scared. But he didn't have any sort of an impact for weeks and weeks and weeks. And when you're, you know, when you're basically fighting for your playoff lives from January on, you know, and he came back in mid-January, that's, you know, that's an issue. Like, why are you forcing this guy into the situation that he doesn't appear to be completely ready for when you're trying to win hockey games? And maybe the answer was because Dan Bowman knew that he was going to be able to pull that trade off and he needed to get him those minutes. We thought it was hogwash at the time, but maybe it was true. I don't know. But we got to remember that for next time. So maybe we'll sound smart next time. No chance?
Probably not.
All right. One of the things that I talked about on the website in a post that I wrote way back in, I don't know, it was mid-May, the Blackhawks did extend their affiliation agreement with the Toledo Walleye for another year. They share that team with the Detroit Red Wings. Blackhawks really aren't going to have too many guys that are going to go down to the ACHL. Depending on who they bring in, I'm going to talk about the depth chart and the rosters at this point here in a little bit for the Blackhawks and the IceHogs. But maybe three or four guys will end up in Toledo from the Blackhawks, you know, prospects, guys that would be in Rockford. And then Rockford will sign some guys that'll also go down there. But not that big of a deal that they're sharing it with another team. And ECHL is not a huge league, so that happens everywhere. But the news there is that the Chicago Express out in Hoffman Estates, the Sears Center, are opening up this October. And the obvious one was that the Blackhawks would send their players there since Rockford's just down the road. They didn't do that. And I think one of the reasons is they want to see the Express, you know, establish themselves as a quality franchise. I think that's part of it. The last time professional hockey was tried out in the Sears Center, it folded rather quickly. It was a disaster. So I think they're apprehensive, you know, they want to see results first and see how they handle their business. And secondly, I think that, you know, the Blackhawks prospects are a draw. Even if they're low rung prospects, they're still a draw. And if the Chicago Express have Blackhawks prospects, what do you think their entire marketing campaign is going to be centered around? It's going to be centered around the fact that they have Blackhawks prospects. Come see Blackhawks prospects. You don't have to drive that extra 45, 50 minutes down the road to see the Rockford IceHogs play. You can come see a few Blackhawks prospects and have good, affordable family fun here at the Sears Center. And I think, I don't know this, no one said anything to, you know, I've never asked, but it's just, it makes perfect sense that the IceHogs would be a little bit concerned about that potential relationship, because they do draw fans out from as far as Huntley, which is right down the road from the Sears Center. I think it was 7, 8, 9, 10 miles.
Yeah,
so
that's about it.
Yeah, so that's a part of the Rockford IceHogs fan base, you know, which is a reasonable, Huntley is a reasonable driving distance, you know, from the Rockford, the Metro Center. So if those people start going to the Sears Center because it's less of a commute, and it's probably the same price, probably even a little less. I haven't looked at the Express ticket prices. It's gonna take business away from Rockford, and Rockford has just become, the IceHogs have just now become a franchise that's able to operate in the black. So I think that they would be concerned about losing any of those dollars to a competing minor league franchise, which Chicago Express are. Different leagues, but when you're that close in market, that's a concern. Okay, let's talk about free agency. First thing the Blackhawks did is they traded a conditional pick. I guess we skipped over Thomas Kopechky, and how dare we? Thomas Kopechky was his negotiating rights were traded to Florida for a draft pick, a low round draft pick. That draft pick was turned around, sent to Buffalo for the rights to Steve Monitor. The Blackhawks quickly signed Steve Monitor. Steve Monitor, a guy that we were all over on this program, leading in January and February, leading up to this past trade deadline. Blackhawks finally get the guy. They said that, you know, they came out and said to the media that was a guy that they had their eyes set on prior to the trade deadline. They just weren't able to make it work. So now they get him. Was the price too high, Superstar?
I don't think so. What was the contract that he did sign? I don't have the numbers in front of me.
Well, it's 4 years, and the cap hits $2.75
million. And,
he's 31 years old. Well, Kopechky got
$3 million. It might have been a little high. I don't think it was, oh, my God, overpaying. But I think he'll be a guy, who, like you mentioned earlier, he's going to have to come in and carry some minutes and then second, third pairing. And, you know,
he's going to make most of his money this year, according to the numbers listed on capkeep.com. He's getting paid $4.6 million this year. So he's getting his money up front, 2.3, 2.3, 1.8. The contract will be up when he's 35 years old. So his 35 year old year, he'll be making $1.8 million. And again, we suspect that the way the NHL figures their cap hit's going to change after this coming season anyway. So if it ends up being your cap hit's your salary, then the Blackhawks made a great deal, because they can certainly afford the 4.6 this year, and then his cap hit would go down to 2.3, 2.3, 1.8 if it ends up happening that way. So he becomes a much more affordable player. But that being said, this is an enormous year for Steve Monitor. He's got to have a big year. This is a guy who, yeah, I mean, I touted him. I said the Blackhawks, you know, he would have made a big difference for the Blackhawks, especially playing against the Vancouver Canucks. He's a good skater. He's not a great skater, but a good skater. He's got a good shot. He can play, you know. You don't necessarily want him on your power play, but if you have injuries, he can play on your power play and do just fine. He's gonna play on your penalty kill, and he's a good body to have out there in those transitional minutes after Keith and Seabrook come off the power play, after Jalmerson and Seabrook and Keith come off the penalty kill. You know, if you got him out there in that rotation, he can fit in just fine in those minutes, and you don't have to worry. You don't have to, you know, you're not, you know, Keith and Seabrook can take a little bit of a breather if he can play the way that he's capable of, and not, you know, let the pressure get to him if he is asked to come in and play second pair of minutes. Again, it's a great depth signing, but he's in on the Blackhawks in a situation where you have a team contending for a Stanley Cup. Monitor's a third pair guy. So we'll see how it works out. But I love the move, obviously.
If you had to put a gauge on it right now, and obviously it's extremely early, what would you say over-under on the average time of ice for him, all said and done at the end of the year?
At the end of the year? Probably 18 minutes. I think early on it'll be 23. I think he'll probably go through a, you know, again, I mean, this is hard to say, because if Sean O'Donnell gets hurt, like Sean O'Donnell, we'll talk about him in a second, a pickup from the Flyers, he as a seventh defenseman, which we expect him to be, he's going to be a very important player. But Monitor is a guy who, if he starts to struggle, Sean O'Donnell could come up and take some of Monitor's minutes. You know, we're talking about Monitor as a guy who, in Game 7 against the Flyers, was a healthy scratch. Now, a part of that was because Lindy Ruff knew, and Darcy Regier knew, that they weren't going to bring him back. So if they, you know, they didn't think he was having a great series, or maybe he had some sort of a nagging injury, or they, whatever the case was, if they knew they were going to bring him back, why play him in game seven? Again, if, you know, he's not a first pair guy, and if he'd played himself into a position where he was a third pair guy on Buffalo for whatever reason, and you know you're not going to bring him back, then give somebody else that opportunity. So that has a part of it, you know, has something to do with that. I didn't watch all of that series. I didn't see – I saw some of it this past week. The games were on the NHL Network. But I don't know. But I think he starts out playing probably 22, 23 minutes a night. And you know, you almost have to – if you're a Blackhawk fan, you have to hope that Letty does you know – slide into the Campbell spot and, you know, take on those minutes gently as the season goes along. And so that slides Monitor back to where he belongs. Cause you don't want to, you know, I don't think he can be successful on the Blackhawks playing 23 minutes a night in a stressful situation. You know, cause again, I think that's overworking him. That's giving him more than he should have. But, yeah, I think by the end of the year, he'll be more towards, like, the 1918.
That's a good number for him, I think.
And it should be because, you know, the other thing with the Campbell, the major issue with losing Brian Campbell that no one is talking about, because I think people just don't want to think about it, is it puts more pressure on Duncan Keith. And that has to be a concern. You know, whatever the reason for Duncan Keith not having a good year last year really was, whatever you think it is, whatever it really is, if it was the pressure of living up to the contract, if it was the pressure of repeating, you know, the expectations, if he was really just tired and out of it, whatever it was, he mentally struggled last year. So if you're going to put a bigger burden on Duncan Keith, how is he going to react? You know, I mean, maybe it's a quiet concern, but it's a concern. You know, so
well,
if
it's got to be. And I mean, at the end of last year, when he basically came out and said he was disinterested for a good chunk of the start of the year, you know, hopefully now, you know, the nice long off season, unlike last year, he comes back a little bit more refreshed, a little less hungover from all the partying they did, and a little more focused and ready to go.
See, there you go, Superstar. I'm going to get letters now. You're talking about Duncan Keith saying he was disinterested. I'm going to get letters. You know what? Actually, I had a great idea. I was thinking about this just before the show. Someone said to me today, it wasn't at prospect camp, because you know, Superstar, how much I am a man of the people.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I spent pretty much the whole scrimmage watching with Sam Fells and Matt Killian of SecondCityHockey.com. It's good seeing those guys. Talking a little puck with them. Fun as always. But, after I was talking with somebody, and I came up with the idea, it was actually my idea, that you should be, since I don't really care for Twitter at all. I just it's not my thing. I think, Superstar, that you should represent the show on Twitter.
I should represent the show on Twitter?
I think that you need I really believe that people want to interact with you, and you should go on. You should sign up on the Twitter and go out there and start twatting with people.
I don't want to Twitter or twatter with people. I mean, I'm more of a people person than you are. But, I just don't want to. I will. If you ask me to, I will. But
really?
There's no guarantee in what's going to come out of this, you know, twatter account.
Twitter.
Right. That's what I said. Twatter.
You know what movie I watched? It was I watched Hot Tub Time Machine over the weekend, Superstar.
No, you did. You were really bored.
No, I was at a friend's house, and he's actually been on this show before, so that'll tell you who it is right there. And and we were just sitting around, you know, he put the kid to bed, and we were sitting around in the basement and drinking beers and, you know, just chatting away, eating pizza. And I you know what? I wish I remember the first movie we tried to watch, but it was absolutely brutal. It was a Hangover type movie, but it wasn't The Hangover. It was some movie where they got drunk in Vegas, and then they went skydiving, and instead of being dropped in Cabo, their drunk pilot dropped them in the middle of nowhere, Mexico. It was horrible. We turned it off, and then we came across Hot Tub Time Machine. I'd never seen it before. But our good buddy John Cusack was in it.
Nice. I have not seen it. I've heard awful, awful things about it.
You know who's in it and who is my secret crush right now, Superstar?
Uh-oh.
I guess it's not going to be much of a secret, but she's on one of my favorite shows. It's now since been canceled. I don't watch much TV, but I did watch Party Down on Stars. You ever seen that?
I have never seen it.
Lizzie Kaplan.
Lizzie, I know the name. Where else would I have known her from?
Well, Hot Tub Time Machine. you know, Mean Girls. I think she was in House Bunny and Mean Girls. She's got.
I'll have to do the Google.
The Lugal.
Yeah.
The Lugal.
I was the one who came up with what can we talk Radio Exposed, the underrated hottie of the week, which was Hope Solo, the USA. Women's World Cup goaltender. Talking about secret crushes.
There was a Hope Solo conversation had today at the Johnny's West Ice Arena.
I would have loved to hear it.
I'm not gonna talk about it right now. All right, let's move on very quickly. Let's talk about these guys that were in their prime when Scotty Bowman was a head coach. Sean O'Donnell, we talk about. 1 year, $850,000 to be the Blackhawks' seventh defenseman.
No problem with that.
I like that move. Veteran, and we're going to get to this in a second. Veteran, solid guy, had a decent year for Philadelphia. He's 40 years old, but he happened to stay healthy all year. Again, he's the seventh defenseman. You know he's going to play a lot. Jason Cullimore played half a season last year. Nick Boynton had a good amount in games. Jordan Hedry got into games as a defenseman. John Scott played games as a defenseman. There's going to be 50 or 60 games to be had there, and you want a guy who's competent, who's a veteran, who could slide right in, a true professional. That's the perfect signing. Andrew Burnett. He wasn't available a year ago, but this signing is, wouldn't have happened. But this signing is the type of signing that was a year too late, in my opinion. But I still like the Andrew Burnett signing. 1 year, $2 million. A guy who's, his hands probably will never go. He's not a great skater. He's never been a great skater. He's got decent size, which he uses very intelligently in front of the net. He's not a guy that really gets too physical. He's not a banger. He doesn't replace Troy Brouwer in the sense of getting himself into situation, like being aggressive on a forecheck and laying bodies all over people and all over the ice. He does none of that, but he's great in front of that. I think I'm concerned when I hear that he's going to start the season with Taves and Kane, and maybe that's the way you start him there to get him hot or whatever. But if Andrew Burnett's on the first line all year long, I think either one, his impressive string of staying healthy is going to end, or he's just going to be out of gas by the end of the year. The concern with Andrew Burnett is that it's been a while since he's been in the playoffs. And, you know, he hasn't really played. This could go two ways. He hasn't really played, you know, competitive hockey like the Blackhawks are now used to in 3 or 4 years. So that could go two ways. Either he can be a half step behind for quite a while, or if by the end of the season when he's really needed, or he could be reinvigorated. I think the Blackhawks are hoping that he's going to be reinvigorated. Everybody likes him. Quenneville coached him in Colorado, so that tells you something right there. I think it's a good sign. I think you can count on him for 20 goals. You needed that guy with a touch around the net. That's great. Get to a signing now that I don't completely understand. Another Joel Quenneville guy, Jamal Mayers, 1 year, $550,000. It's a contract that's easy to dump, so it's not something that I'm going to sit here and criticize. But my main concern with Jamal Mayers is that they're talking about Jamal Mayers to be the fourth line center. I don't get it. I just don't get it. Jamal Mayers, nice guy. Again, a great guy, a journeyman veteran, been in a lot of places, a lot of situations, knows Joel Quenneville very well, is going to come in and he's going to be a leader. Again, there's a theme going on here that I want to talk about. Sean O'Donnell, Andrew Burnett, Jamal Mayers, veterans, good guys, leaders. You want to talk about this fourth guy?
I'll let you take it.
So the Blackhawks signed those three guys, Brunette, O'Donnell, Jamal Mayers. You know, I don't think anybody's pressed Stan Bowman on this, but it, you know, it's certainly, you connect all the dots. They were in on the Joel Ward conversation, but, and probably understandably so, they got out of that conversation because Joel Ward got, what was it, 4 years? And if I could, I'll pull it up real quick. One of the things, when I hope the audio is good tonight because I'm on a different headset, but this makes me more, I can be more flexible here at the station. Okay, so yeah, you have 4 years and $3 million a year. And he didn't get any of it front-loaded, according to CapGeek. He got it straight across the board. Probably one more year than the Hawks were comfortable with. 30-year-old guy who's gonna play an aggressive game, a dirty game again, and not a guy who's been in a lot of had injury issues, but he hasn't proven that he can score a lot of goals in the regular season. He had a great playoff. And he's been a good playoff performer. I think that's one of the reasons why the Blackhawks were interested in him, if we're correct in connecting those dots and to the right place. But probably got a little bit too rich. Blackhawks didn't want to give him that fourth year, is what I'm assuming. Maybe the $3 million was a little bit too much too. But they backed out of it. In response, they signed Philadelphia Flyers, former Philadelphia Flyers left wing. I guess you could put him on your right wing, too. Daniel Carcillo.
Oh, boy.
1 year, $775,000. 1 year, $775,000 for Daniel Carcillo. What was your first, when you first heard the news, what was your impression?
I was like, what? And you know what? One of the only things that I really thought about when I heard it, I was like, you know what? This just screams depth move at the most desperate form. I didn't even know how to process it at first.
Listen, we talked about this last year, and the Blackhawks, you know, they forget the name. The Blackhawks, you know, the guy, Ben Eager. Ben Eager was an important piece to the Stanley Cup team. Did he do dumb things? Yes. Okay. Was he, you know, he was a 6'4", 230 25, 30-pound guy who had a soft noggin, who couldn't really drop the gloves all the time because every time he did, he got concussed. So he wasn't a perfect player over there on the left side on your fourth line. But he was an important piece on that side of your line, who also had a good shot, who could skate. And he wreaked havoc going up and down that left wing. And as Blackhawks fans saw, occasionally he'd move up to a scoring line and just fill a void for a period or two or a couple of games. And because he was a decent skater and he was physical, he filled that role effectively in small doses. So Ben Eager, for all of his faults, existed on the Blackhawks in a fourth line role, and they won a Stanley Cup. So everything's fine. The problem with Daniel Carcillo, okay, and my issue with all of these moves, okay, did Stan Bowman watch the series with Vancouver and come away with the impression that we didn't beat the Vancouver Canucks because we weren't dumb enough? Superstar, what was the turning point of that series? The moment that stuck out to you that everything turned around for the Blackhawks, what was that moment?
I can't even remember what you're referring to now. It's been so long ago.
It was the Rafi Torres hit on Brent Seabrook.
Yes. Good call.
An unnecessary hit.
Dumb. Bad, dumb hockey.
For a lot of reasons. It didn't fit in the score of the game at the time. It was reckless, it endangered Seabrook's health, all those things, but it just wasn't necessary at the time. It was a dumb maneuver by a dumb hockey player. An effective hockey player at times, but a guy who does a lot of dumb things on the ice. Rafi Torres. Okay? That was what turned the tide in that series. Up to that point, yeah, the Blackhawks didn't have Dave Bolin back yet, but the reason why the Blackhawks were being defeated by the Vancouver Canucks three in a row leading up to game four, and the hit happened in game three, but that was the turnaround. That was the point where Duncan Keith woke up and decided to start caring again and meeting the media. But up to that point, the Blackhawks weren't losing because they weren't tough enough. They weren't losing because they didn't have enough veterans. They were losing because they were being outskated. They were being skated out of the rink. They couldn't keep up with the Vancouver Canucks. So did Stan Bowman look at that and say, you know what? You know what? How we would have beat those damn Canucks? If we were older, if we were slower, and if we were dumber, we would have beaten those Vancouver Canucks. Because that's what he's done. He's gotten older. He's gotten slower. And he's definitely gotten dumber with Daniel Carcillo. And I know, you know, and John at the Fifth Feather wrote a post, you know, John, you know, a lot of times, and I'm not taking a shot at John at all. I think his post was insightful. It was valid. It had strong points in it. But a lot of times, and I do this, it's when you see a conversation going on and you're kind of looking through that conversation and you see kind of a point that you feel that everybody else is missing and you zone in on that. And like he did, he articulated very well over at thefifthfeather.com. Everybody listening to this, so check it out, read it. It was all valid stuff. Great post on his part. But the thing that it left out, what's the first thing that you have to deal with Daniel Carcillo? What's the first thing, as he becomes a Blackhawk, do you have to deal with this year? He suspended the first two games of the season. Why is he suspended the first two games of the season? Because he confronted referees between periods and on the bench before a period started in the playoffs. Got him suspended, himself suspended for 2 games. John was, his post was directed at, and I have to, you know, because I know that when I go off on this move, everybody's going to be like, oh, but John, this other, he said all this. And yeah, that's all good stuff. But John's post was directed at people that said Daniel Carcillo takes dumb penalties. And he has a post that it, you know, graphs it all out for you if that's all you think Daniel Carcillo is. I'm going to expand the point. Daniel Carcillo is selfish. Carcillo easily loses focus. He's easily distracted. And sometimes he goes out of his way to be a disturbance. And that doesn't just disturb the other team, it disturbs his own team. The first 2 games of the season, he can't play because he was selfish.
Well, you know who you just described? Title Beach.
That's the other point. What kind of message is Stan Bowman sending to Kyle Beach? They go down to Rockford and they you know, and we talk, I talk about it all the time because I see Kyle Beach more than just about anybody that doesn't work or isn't around the Blackhawks or the Ice Hawks on a daily basis. What do we talk about with Kyle Beach? It's losing focus in games. It's the dumb penalties, but it's also the selfishness of, you know, you're sometimes you try too hard to draw a penalty and you take yourself out of a play. Now, will Daniel Carcillo do that as a Blackhawk? I don't know. But what did Stan Bowman say in his press conference about Carcillo? And why is he even here? Stan Bowman says, oh, well, he could play on, he's skilled enough that he could play on any line. Did you watch the Flyers series against Buffalo? Did you watch Daniel Carcillo play for the Flyers last year? What line did he ever stick on and have success on? He didn't. There's a ton of forward talent on that Flyer team last year. Where exactly did he stick and have success with all of those talented forwards on the Flyers? Where did he have success?
Not very high.
He didn't. In the playoffs, he had a new line every game. Carcillo's just good enough to play with just about anybody, but he's not really good enough to stick anywhere or have success with anybody. And then Stan Bowman goes in his press conference and says, well, we like those things. We like that aggressiveness, that edge that Daniel Carcillo plays. We like that in him. So they're asking Carcillo to be the guy that he was in 2010 when Blackhawk fans laughed at LaViolette, laughed at the Flyers for putting Daniel Carcillo in Stanley Cup playoff in the Stanley Cup finals. Laughed at them. And again, that's the finals. There's a lot of work to be done to get to the, you know, there's a lot of grunt work to get to the playoffs and stuff. But this is a guy that you said, fine, put Carcillo in the lineup. We'll take the power plays. As he's trying to go into business for himself out on the ice, we'll skate right around him, and we'll play your team 5-on-4. And now he's on your team. I just don't understand. You know, Blackhawk fans. You know, this is a separate issue. But Blackhawk fans, you know, they'll sit there all year long, and they'll call these Vancouver Canucks players all these names, and they'll complain about the Vancouver Canucks, and the Canucks are this, and they're that, and they're douches, and all this kind of stuff. But then they'll sit there and say, well, we got to get nastier. We have to get grittier. Yeah, I really like this Daniel Carcillo move. Why? He's six foot. That's it. He's not very big. He doesn't intimidate anybody. He's willing to fight bigger guys, which sometimes, you know, when a smaller, the Blackhawks fans know this. When John Scott fights anybody, it's a moral victory for the other team. He could pound, like Kevin Westgarth, he could pound a face off of a guy And it's not an energy lifting experience for the Blackhawks, because the other team is just as lifted by it, because it's a moral victory for anybody who stands up to John Scott. So Daniel Carcillo, if he's willing to fight just about anybody, then okay, that's fine. But when did the Blackhawks, who supposedly are trying to be the Detroit Red Wings, when did they decide that, oh no, well, we've got to be the Vancouver Canucks? Did the Vancouver Canucks win the Stanley Cup?
No.
No. The main reason, I believe, watching the Stanley Cup Finals, why Vancouver didn't win was because their defense just fell apart with injuries. And the guys that were playing, Bieksa, you know, with a bad wheel, Edler with a broken hand, or fingers on his hand, I mean, they didn't have much left. But you also had Torres, Yannick Hansen, who just couldn't keep their cool. And now you're adding this element to your team. It's like one, it's one thing to go out and add attributes that Ben Eager had, but you're not getting the proper attributes, the desirable attributes that Ben Eager brought. The physical size. Eager railed, I mean, he'd run over people. Carcillo's not going to do that. But what do you get? Like we talked about, what kind of mixed signal does this send? When you've been going to Rockford and say, Kyle, we need you to focus, we need you to play with more composure and all that, and you go out and you sign Daniel Carcillo, what kind of message does that send to Kyle Beach? Sends a mixed message. I just don't understand it. I mean, no one will be able to explain it to me, because it's – listen, shit stinks. Just because it's your shit doesn't mean it doesn't stink. You don't put a Blackhawks sweater over Daniel Carcillo's head and expect him to not stink. And I just think – I think it's a huge mistake. I don't see how he helps the team. I don't see it. I watched him play, and you get the other thing. You know, look at Sean Avery. Sean Avery was a very good pest for a while. A lot of baggage. He impacted his team negatively in ways over a lot of times. But he was a mega pest that got under a lot of other players' skins for a great amount of time. But the more and more that he made the rounds, which each year that passed, the more and more he made the rounds, players just learned to ignore him. They've seen his act, they know what he's about, and they just ignore him. I saw that going back and watching the replay of that Flyers Buffalo series. They just, you know, Carcillo comes in and he's going to throw those, you know, into a pile. He's going to throw those few jabs, and then he turns and you know, he turtles away because he wants you to get mad at him and, you know, just start wailing on him to take a penalty. And guys just ignored him. Now, maybe because he's changing conferences, there's a window of opportunity where he can get under other guys' skins and maybe bring power plays and that. But I just think that the more those guys circle the league, each year they're less and less effective. And now, look at Sean Avery now. What does Sean Avery do for the New York Rangers? Nothing. Maybe once every 2 or 3 weeks you hear about Sean Avery or watch a game and you see that he has a decent game. But he's not making an impact every single night. And you're bringing Daniel Carcillo to be a role player. You want him to have an impact every night. I just don't see it. Getting back to the thing about, you know, we're seeing Stan Bowman bring Brunette, Mayers, O'Donnell, these veteran guys. And don't tell me that they were brought in because of Carcillo, because Carcillo was signed at 5:30 in the afternoon or whatever he was. If they really wanted Daniel Carcillo, they would have got him at noon. And if Daniel Carcillo is such a valuable guy, how come the Blackhawks got him for $775,000? 1 year on the open market as an unrestricted free agent, Carcillo was only able to get 1 year and $750,000. How valuable is he?
Not very much at that number.
Not according to the rest of the league. Not the market didn't see it. But I want we don't have that much time left, and I figured this was going to happen. Brunette, O'Donnell, Mayers, why is there this need for all these veteran leadership guys, these good character guys? The Blackhawks won a Stanley Cup with their core, right? Shouldn't those guys be leaders? They won a Stanley Cup together. Shouldn't they be leaders?
They should.
So what's the need for all these veteran guys with, you know, these track records of being great in the locker room and being able to, like, you know, taking the bull by the horns in the room and leading? Like, why are these guys needed? Why are those attributes needed? It could be by pure coincidence that these are the guys. It could be. But I don't know. I to me, something's wrong in that room. And the Hawks know it. Because why would you need those three guys? Those three guys. I can understand bringing in one. I can understand almost, you know, bringing in two. You know, to kind of mix up that room, give it a little bit of different flavor. But when you bring in three of those guys who are going to come in, and they're not going to sit in their stalls and be quiet. They're going to be chirping in there. And how does that, you know, does that offend the Stanley Cup champion leaders of this team? Does that offend them? Is that, you know, they're all, I mean, O'Donnell, Brunette, Mayers, all great guys. But if they come in and they're going to try to, you know, lead, you know, I mean, I'm sure they're just going to lead by example at first, but during the course of the season, when the team's down and out, if they try to, you know, pull the team, you know, will there be resistance in there? Like, hey, who the hell are you? You know, we won the Stanley Cup. We'll take care of this. Is there going to be a problem in that room? Or was there a problem already? And that's why these guys are here. It's an interesting question.
That is a very interesting question. And on that note, I actually, I don't know if you heard any of this, but it was a rumor that I heard that Patrick Kane had checked himself into a rehab facility.
Yeah, that's not true. I don't even want to talk about it.
We don't have enough time to divulge into that, but
I can. I don't want to talk about it. let's go over to we got about 7 minutes left. Let's go over the depth chart for everybody to kind of to get an idea of what's going on here. On the Blackhawks down the middle, it's Stan Bowman today meeting the media after a development camp ended. Basically said, hey, no, Patrick Sharp's our second line center. So down the middle, you're going Taves, Sharp, Bolin, and possibly Marcus Kruger, possibly Ben Smith, or it could just end up being Jamal Mayers. I think Jamal Mayers is going to have a hard time, unless there's injuries, getting ice time on this team. I don't see where he fits. I know he'll get minutes just because of the relationship with Quenneville. But I don't see him being able to, if everybody's healthy, get very many minutes. He's just he's old now. People are putting him in that center spot. I think Mayers can take faceoffs, Like if Kruger ends up playing that on that fourth line, by what Stan Bowman's saying, that's Kruger's spot to lose. Like Kruger can start, he could line up, he could be the center on that line, and Mayers just takes the defensive zone faceoffs. I could see that happening. You know, the defensive zone and the faceoffs on the right side of the ice. I could see Mayers taking those and Kruger taking neutral zone. Basically neutral zone and some faceoffs on the left side of the ice in the offensive zone. I could see that happening, but again, I mean, will Mayers beat Ben Smith out for, you know, a spot in the top 12? I don't know. Blackhawks re-signed Victor Stahlberg. He was arbitration eligible. What was he going to get in arbitration? He was a part of the process. He it's available to him. He's got to do it. If he doesn't elect for arbitration, then he gives the Blackhawks all of the power. You know, so I believe what was it? Stahlberg, 2 years. I got my little chart here. Is everybody screaming it? $875,000. So 2 years, $875,000. It's actually about $90,000 in cash. The value of what he'll actually make. He made $785,000 last year in actual money. That wasn't his cap hit, but that's what he made. So it's about $90,000 raise for Stahlberg. So he gets that. So he's in the mix. You got Rusty Oles still there. Blackhawks still list him as being on IR. They're saying that they're going to give him a chance in training camp. I don't really like his chances, but we'll put him in the mix on the left side. So you got Brunette, Oles. That third line is going to be together. The Blackhawks are going to re-sign Frolik unless he throws a hissy fit and goes back to Europe, because that's his only option. Sam Feltz and I were talking today, and he said if Frolik was going to get an offer sheet, he would have got it by now. And if he gets an offer sheet, you're just going to let him go anyway. There's no point in paying Frolik more than $1.5 million. There's no point to it. Pay him $1.5 million. I talked about it with Hockey Night a few weeks ago when I was on with them. You throw him a bone if you want to, if you're Stan Bowman, if you love him so much, give him $1.5 million for 1 year and say, listen, kid, I love you, but prove me right and I'll give you a 3-year deal next year. You know, I want Michael Frolik, if I'm Stan Bowman, in a run to the cup, I want Michael Frolik playing his best hockey. I want him playing for a contract. And then I can sit there, I can sit back and look at the chips and decide whether or not that's real, whether that's Michael Frolik playing for a contract and if I'm really going to get that once he gets the big one. You know, but I want him this year, I want him playing for a contract. And if he doesn't fall in line, tell him to take a walk, you know. He's a nice player to have on that third line. They want to have that third line, Bickleball and Frolik together, but you know, there's no point to give in to him. He didn't earn it. You know, 3 or 4 playoff games does not make a 3-year contract. Shouldn't anyway. So you got Brunette, Oles, Bickle, Carcillo, Ben Smith on your left side. All 3 forward positions. On the right side, you got Kane, Hossa, Frolik, Stahlberg, against Smith. The possibilities of guys that could potentially make the team, maybe Klinkhammer in a fourth line role if there's an injury. Morin, if he lights it up in camp, possibility. I just don't see anybody else doing that. Over on the defense side, Keith Seabrook, Jalmerson, Letty, Campoli, Monitor, O'Donnell, Scott. To the forward position. Do you think this will be the year that Joe Quenneville figures out that Marian Hossa's played his best hockey with Jonathan Toews, and that's who he should play with, and Patrick Kane and Patrick Sharp typically play their best hockey together and like put the lines that way instead of keeping Toews and Kane together?
I hope so. I really do. I mean, it needs to be done eventually, right? I mean, as much as he juggles lines, you figure give those combinations at least a fighting chance to stay together.
I know what the concern is with Sharp and Kane on the same line together is that you need someone on the left side that's thinking defense first. You know, I don't know. Maybe Frolik could be that guy. Maybe you can mold Frolik into that guy. I don't know. But it's so obvious, and he doesn't go to it. You know?
Well, and I think the problem with Frolik is Frolik takes so many unnecessary shots. There's only one puck, and with Kane and Sharp both being, the shooters, you need another guy willing to give up the puck and put those guys in scoring position. And I don't think Frolik is that guy.
No, I mean, yeah, Frolik's a third line player, nothing more. You know, I mean, he's got enough skill that it's like, okay, well, we've got injuries, and well, we could play Frolik and host a spot for a few weeks. You know, that's nice, but that's all he is. I wanted to get to Rockford real quick. This is what Rockford's team looks right now down the middle. Brandon Peary, Brett McLean that they got coming back over from Europe. Rockford re-signed to an AHL contract. Pete LeBlanc, he figures to be the third-line center. Then you've got David Gilbert. Saw Byron Fryce at prospect camp this week. I think Byron Fryce is going to be in Toledo. There's not much to see there. On the left side, it's either Beach or Morin. We'll call it Morin right now. Jeremy Morin, Rob Klinkhammer, Philip Paradis, Brandon Bolig in that fourth line, sort of enforcer kind of a spot as of right now. I think the Ice Hogs are going to need another enforcer. A lot of kids that are going to need to be protected. AHL hockey is rough hockey. So we'll see what happens there. On the right side, Kyle Beach. If Igor Makarov comes back, Jimmy Hayes, who was impressive. Can't say as much for his little brother. Didn't look impressive at all. Didn't impress me at all. And Christy Domenico is also a center. But that's what the Ice Hogs look like right now. And, of course, Kruger, who, if you listen to what Stan Bowman says, he's on the NHL roster. And then if Ben Smith doesn't make the team, and there's always the possibility that Rusty Olesch gets put on waivers and gets sent down to Rockford as well. That could happen. On the defense side, Rockford still needs a goalie. Their only goalie right now is Alec Richards. It could be Cristobal Huue. I wouldn't close the book on that possibility. And they need a veteran defenseman. Jason Culmore is still out there. Garnet X will be signed with the Red Wings. So that option's out the window. Ivan Vishnevsky, who I wouldn't really call a veteran defenseman. He signed with the KHL. The Blackhawks kept his rights, but he's in the AHL. So your defense is right now, that, you know, leaving a spot open for a veteran every night blue liner is Ryan Stanton and Sean Lalonde, Connolly, and forget about where I'm ranking these guys. These are, you know, Connolly and you know, whoever your veteran D guy is, preferably a guy who's defense first, or that's his specialty. And then Joe Lavin and Dylan Olsen. Jonathan Carlson, the Blackhawks still have his rights. I don't think he's coming back. But they still have his rights for another year. He's still under contract for another year, so we'll throw him into the mix there. And Simone Denny-Pepin, if he doesn't improve his skating, he'll be back in Toledo. So that's what it looks like right now. The only other guy, Rob Flick, has the option of whether or not to go as a forward. Has an option of whether or not to go back to junior or turn pro. I'm sure he's going to come to camp and then figure it out after that. And that's it. Corey Crawford and Alexander Salak. That's your pair up front. And as we know, the last three seasons, the guy who started the season as the number one goalie eventually lost that spot. So Corey Crawford, you're on the clock. But that's going to be all the time that we have, Superstar.
Well, you know, we wanted to ease into it. We got through a lot, and we'll be back and cover the rest of this nonsense soon enough.
We didn't talk about prospect camp, or I didn't talk about – I was there, you weren't. But honestly, there's really not much to talk about. I mean, it was very unimpressive. Very unimpressive. You know, and it's not a big deal because all these, you know, all the names that you're interested in will be back in this thing, you know, minus Dylan Olsen. He can't, he won't be able to participate in prospect camp next year. But all, pretty much all of these guys, with the exception of Gilbert and Paradis, who are going to Rockford, and they'll be pro. Joey Lavin will be a pro. But all the other, all the recent draft picks and all that, they'll all be back next year, and then you can start making evaluations on the guys and deciding whether or not they're improving, or you're concerned whether they'll ever, you know, turn into something. When they're 18 years old, 19 years old, I mean, I don't think that you can make a really a decision one way or another. The only guy I would say that don't believe the hype is Steve Moses. That guy, he stands out because he goes into business for himself on the ice. He's Sergei Samsonov. There's really not much there. I mean, he probably earned himself an invite to training camp because he did work hard, and you could see that he was trying to impress, but his, you know, he doesn't use the other guys on the ice enough. And you could see the other guys were getting annoyed with him. And I was standing at ice level, and you could just tell the expression on his line mate's face that they were getting annoyed with him. But Terry Broadhurst, the kid from New Lenox, he had a good camp. I could see him getting an invite to training camp and then being cut rather quickly. But he had a good camp. And but again, other than that, there really isn't much to talk about. Nobody really stood out. And so we'll see them again next year. Superstar, I will. I think I'll see you later this week.
I will, Thursday afternoon, evening, and once again, RadioExposed.net. We will be appearing on their show over the weekend. That'll be must listen. Hopefully, we're not too intoxicated when that happens, but we're not promising anything.
Right. And we'll be back next week because we'll have to talk about that. And I'm sure there's going to be, I'm positive there's going to be Blackhawk news in the next couple of days. So we'll have that to talk about as well. And I guess we'll talk about it then.
Outstanding.
All right, Superstar, thank you for doing the thing.
Doing the thing with the thing. It was my pleasure, and I'm looking forward to really getting back into the swing of this.
And I almost forgot, Superstar. You know what Friday is, right?
Do I dare ask?
It's the 2-year anniversary of the Third Man in Radio.
How about that?
Friday.
2 years.
2 years. 2 years, and we're still not at 100. And this is a weekly show.
I was just about to say, in 2 years, and we haven't hit 100.
Yeah.
Maybe too many sabbaticals.
Yeah, two month long sabbaticals. But yeah, that was the title of the show. That's what, for those of you that look at those things, that's what that was about. 2 years. It's also the 2-year anniversary of the Blackhawks firing Dale Talon, or reassigning Dale Talon and making Stan Bowman GM. So that's Friday, and it was by pure coincidence. It was our first show. So it wasn't actually our first show. We did a test show, and then we did the what amounts to the number one, the first or whatever. I don't know. This is too much.
Too much. We gotta go.
All right. Thanks everybody for listening. We'll be back next week. I'm not gonna say what day, what time, but we'll be back, and we'll ramble on for another hour and a half. Thanks everybody for joining us, and that's it. Good night.
Johnny always says, you can just screw so much and drink so much.
Let's get fucking like a monkey.